Hey everyone, I'm Simmer, a student at Harvard University.
And I'm Roger, a student at King's College London.
And this is That Medic Podcast.
In this episode of the podcast, I had the pleasure of speaking to Dr. Juan Hughes, the CEO of Synapsys, a fast-growing digital health company transforming the way patients are referred across primary, secondary, and community settings. In this episode, we discuss the story of Synapsys, Dr. Hughes' journey into entrepreneurship, and his vision for the future. Without further ado, let's have a listen.
Right, Dr. Juan, thank you so much for, I hope I said it correctly, but thank you so much for coming on the show. I really do appreciate it. How are you this morning?
I am really good. I'm really good. We just spoke and I'm in need of a haircut, but apart from that, I'm good.
I'll say thankfully it's not video, so we're lucky. We're both very lucky.
Yes, your audience are very lucky that it's not a video. You're right.
Wonderful. So look, we normally start these shows by sort of asking the question, so why did you decide to sort of study medicine in the first place?
Oh, wow. Why did I decide to study medicine? I think it's, an absolutely fantastic profession. You know, it's a great thing to study in the first place. Such an interesting, such a privilege to, to get to do the things you are allowed to do as a medical student and then as a doctor. It's just so fascinating. And, I was always, it's really cliched, isn't it? But it's the truth. I was always interested. I was fascinated by science. So, my granddad was a scientist and, an amazing teacher. So I was always kind of fascinated in all the things that he was teaching. And I remember in school, that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a scientist when I was in primary school. And then I injured my leg when I was about 14 playing rugby and I had to have some physiotherapy, not very badly, but I had to have some physiotherapy for a bit. And I remember sitting in the kind of the atrium of the hospital, just waiting for my appointment, thinking, oh, wow, this would be a nice place to work. And I think as soon as those words come out of your mouth and your parents hear it, it's just like, yes, that is a brilliant idea. I don't regret that decision, for a second. The absolutely best decision I made.
Yeah.
Such a wonderful career, such a great colleagues, great people to be around. So yeah, it's a great decision. And as you say, the difference between medicine and pure science is that it's a very human thing, isn't it? Yeah. Very applied. So that I was just really into it. From 14, actually, I was really into doing it.
Is that actually what you expected when you came into medical school? Is anything sort of surprised you about it?
Going into medical school, I just turned 18 actually when I started medical school. So and where I studied in Cardiff, we were straight like first day really it was dissecting.
Imagine the first day.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So it may not have actually been the first day. It's certainly the first week. What a bizarre experience that is. If you kind of have an out-of-body experience and look at what you're doing, having just come off your summer holidays, it's kind of a real eye-opener. But no, other than that, those kind of things, I guess it was as I was expecting, really. It was all the things that I'd hoped. It was very scientific, very applied, very interesting, working with highly motivated people, people, in medicine, they're really into what they're doing, and that's what I wanted. And that's what I found, actually. People were really engaged, very interesting and very capable and intelligent. So it was such a privilege to be in that environment.
Awesome. So like you're the CEO of Synapsys. So awesome to have you on. And we'll definitely sort of explore that a bit later. But I'm just wondering, what was your sort of first taste of entrepreneurship at medical school or when you started the NHS? When did you sort of get involved with that particular area?
So I was thinking about this. So really I got into, so I did an elective in Harvard. And during that elective, I played rugby for Harvard Business School. It just so happened that a friend of the friend was kind of the captain at the time. He was doing an MBA there. And, during that period, I met so many people who, were in Harvard Business School, and to get in is very hard. So they'd already done a lot of stuff, different stuff in business. And just their stories were really inspiring, from, a guy who'd set up a business. He was American, but set up a business in Vietnam, redeploying landmine victims and former sex workers to, at that time, so this is back in 2004, so yes, quite a long time ago. So his business was basically transcribing books. That was his business, to make them digital. And, you know, they were working for the New York Library, for example, and loads of other stories. But I just thought, these people are very impressive and have very interesting experiences, you know. So that kind of inspired me, I guess, to think, okay, well, this is a real blind spot I have. You know, I need to educate myself a bit about what this business thing is all about. And I guess that's where it started, really.
Did you sort of come across any entrepreneurship opportunities whilst at medical school? Was it something that was talked about at all? Or is it sort of changing, I think, I'm guessing now?
Definitely changed from now. So, yeah, I probably even frowned upon. It was probably, you know what I mean? It was very much... I became an ENT surgeon, so it was all about how dedicated you are, you know, and that kind of mentality turned me off a little bit. Actually, I think, you know, actually people can do many things. People are very capable. But that was the prevailing mentality. But one thing I did do, I did a residential course. It was for 5 days or something, and it was run by the SAID School, I think, which is the business school for MIT. That's Oxford. So anyway, the MIT Business School and the Judge School, which is the Cambridge Business School. So they together did this 5-day residential course. And I can't remember even how I came across it, but I kind of applied and I went on it. And that was really eye-opening, actually. So the purpose of that course really was to encourage people to get into entrepreneurship. So I must have been, you know, at the back of my mind, at least to apply.
Yeah, yeah. And then, to go on it, yeah.
Yeah, and then that experience, it made it kind of seem possible in a way, you know. And so, yeah, so these are kind of thoughts that were kind of brewing away in my mind. But at the same time, you know, I was kind of busy getting into ENT surgery as well. So it's kind of these two tracks which have kind of continued ever since.
So the real question is, how did you go from being an ENT surgeon to then going into sort of, you know, identifying a problem, you know, building this awesome company? How did you sort of make that transition, and where did you sort of come across this sort of problem?
Well, so I started by deciding that I wanted to start a company. So that's where it starts. So, and I listened to a very inspiring talk. There's a guy called, I grew up in Wales. You may have noticed. But there's a really inspiring guy who I only came across much later, actually. So a guy called Terry Matthews. So he was the first Welsh billionaire. But, you know, his net worth is not important, really. But what was important was the way he spoke about entrepreneurship. So he is a hugely inspiring person. So he, you know, he's very well known in telecom. But he also has done many other things, like he brought the Ryder Cup, you know, the third biggest sporting event in the world, to Wales, you know, and he hosted it in his hotel. Do you know what I mean?
Wow.
You think these things,
oh my God,
you know, are inevitable, but they're not, you know. And what learned from watching him on YouTube and listening to him was actually it was just his drive that made that.
Mm.
He decided, you know, what he wanted to do, and he absolutely made sure that he did it. And I listened to him and I thought, actually, what it's about is just applying yourself, just actually starting and not giving up.
I think that's one thing medical students have as well. That's one thing they do have, I think, which is probably one of the reasons you're seeing all these sort of clinical entrepreneurs coming out, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. You know, if you get into medical school and you get out the other side, you know, it means that you're a very capable person. You know, you have all, you know, you have all the IQ you need, plus lots of other skills, you know? So yeah, absolutely. Why not? You know? But listening to him and then deciding, you know what, I'm going to start a company, and then thinking, okay, what am I
doing? Where do I start?
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, so that's how we started. But you know, Synapsys isn't my first company. So Synapsys is, my second company, actually. So I kind of learned along the way as well.
So, you know, for those sort of listening, I was wondering if you could sort of explain exactly how you came across, sort of explain what Synapsys is for medical students listening, but also how you sort of identified, you know, sort of referrals as an issue and how you went sort of about addressing it.
Yeah, sure. So Synapsys very simply allows clinicians who, you know, who are seeing a patient to be able to get advice from somebody who's more experienced in that particular condition. So, you know, if it's a dermatology problem, you know, a general practitioner can just very quickly using Synapsys connect with a dermatologist, get advice. Or if it's a, you know, an arrhythmia, they can connect with a cardiologist and get advice. So in its essence, Synapsys is a communication platform. But it's a communication platform that's really highly tailored for the needs of the health system and the way the health system works. So it connects parts of the health system and allows clinicians to make, you know, better decisions when they're seeing patients before they move the patients around the system. So it reduces the unnecessary movement of patients or unnecessary referrals, basically. And it came out of my experience working, you know, as a clinician, as an ENT surgeon. So one of the things I had to do when I was, a junior doctor, a second year registrar, one of the jobs I had to do was go through all the referral letters into our department. So there were 200 letters a week. And it was my job every week to go through them. And what I was supposed to do was, you know, accept them or reject them or change the urgency in some way. And I was reading these letters and I was thinking, you know, the horse has bolted. There's absolutely no way I'm rejecting these letters. You know, these patients who are written about in this letter, they have seen already a very experienced clinician, their GP, who knows them very well. And that doctor has decided they need to see an ENT surgeon. So who am I now
to say,
well, actually, you know, I've read your letter. No, did I?
No.
But I would remember a lot of the patients, you know, from the letters. So when they came to clinic, you know, what 6-8 weeks later, I would remember. And, you know, it became really clear to me, actually, these patients didn't actually need to come, many of them. You know, this problem, if only the GP would have been able to speak to me there and then, I would have told them, you know, why don't you try this medication, you know, for a period of time. It's going to take 2 months to know whether it works or not. And then if it hasn't worked, then we would start to think about whether an operation is appropriate. And so I could see, you know, from our department point of view, you know, we were very busy seeing patients actually who could have been dealt with much quicker and easier. And that was affecting our waiting list, for example. You know, for the GP, they may have been a bit anxious about not knowing what to do, you know, and ended up making a referral. But for the patients, you know, it's actually a really bad experience.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them, they'd be very anxious, you know. They would have to take a day off, come with their relative, expecting to be told they need an operation. And sometimes they'd be kind of disappointed that, you know, what do you mean? You're only going to do an allergy test, or you're only going to, you know, prescribe me an antihistamine or something, or, you know, steroid spray for my nose. You know, what do you mean? You know, and I think, you know, I was trying to understand what their frustration was, and it's probably their expectation. You know, if you're going to see an ENT surgeon, aren't you going to have an operation? You know, is that what they waited all this time to have? So I could see that the way things were working then wasn't serving anybody in the system. You know, no stakeholders were benefiting from the way it worked. And it became very clear to me that it was inevitable that things would change. It was like clear as day. I thought, And I thought that change is going to be so fundamental to the way specialist care is delivered. Either I'm going to be subject to it. So, you know, if I just carry on, you know, I'm going to have to respond to this change in some way. It's going to affect the way I work, or I can lead it. You know, so it was absolutely clear to me that this is a hugely interesting space to start a business. So that's how it worked.
So was that sort of your entrepreneurial spirit? Because you could have maybe just speaking to one of the consultants and been like, look, this is an issue, or maybe we'll like run a quality improvement project or something to sort of address it in a small scale thing. But of course you were like, no, let's address this issue in its full form. So was that sort of your entrepreneurial spirit you reckon coming through? Or?
Yeah. So, you know, I tell you this, and I mean it. To start a business like that, you have to be deluded at the beginning. There's no two ways about it, you know? I was a registrar just plodding around doing my job. And, you know, I had the gumption to think that I could think of it and make it happen. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And if you look at it objectively, you know, you have to have some kind of, you could call it confidence, but to a degree you have to, have some kind of delusion, you know, I'm joking about that clearly, but
yeah.
There is a degree of that. So you have to be able to imagine a future different to what it is now, fundamentally different to what it is now, and also have the confidence to think, I can make that happen. And you know, the reason why it's so difficult at the beginning is, one, people can't see what you see, or they see what you see, but they look at you and think, well, you're not going to be able to make this happen. You know, surely someone else is going to do this. Who are you to take this on? And that's why it's incredibly difficult at the beginning. And there's no two ways about it. It is, you know, and, you know, I had to explain the concept to people and why. And so the other thing I did, I say deluded or confidence, but it was grounded in fact. So I didn't go from, you know, having this idea to thinking, okay, I'm starting a company and.
Yeah. You showed them, right?
There was more rigor to it than that, you know? So I kind of realized that things would change, but I sought evidence to qualify my intuition. So what I did, I looked up, the literature, like you would with any research project. And there was a systematic review, actually, that looked at interventions. So they'd done of all international evidence. So it was funded by the NIHR. So it's a very credible piece of research. And what that systematic review showed was that without spending any a huge amount of additional money, the way to reduce unnecessary referrals was actually to provide specialist advice to GPs when they needed it. And that was much superior to even training, or much superior and much, much cheaper than referral management centers, which were in vogue at the time and very controversial. So, you know, my kind of confidence that things would change was grounded in this evidence. And, you know, and that was built on, that paper was built on, you know, 20 years of some RCTs, but other trials. So, you know, you have to seek evidence, but at some point you have to think, okay, this is the future. Nobody else is going to do it. You know, I'm going to do it.
So what was the sort of resistance to change? It seems like a no-brainer now, but why were people saying no? What was the resistance to change? Are they just happy in the ways, or do they just...
So all sorts of things. So people are always concerned for other people. That's what I found. So, you know, so we'd speak to GPs sometimes, often, like loads, you know. So you have to, when you start a company, you have to talk to loads, as many people as you can. So, you know, we would go into workshops, for example, and, you know, give a presentation about the idea and just listen to all the criticisms. And there were loads of criticisms.
That must have been a hard thing when you're starting off.
It was. It was pretty painful, actually. But the criticisms were things like, well, the consultant, why would the consultant ever give their time? Why would they do it? You know, how are you going to, convince them to do it? I haven't got time. You know, I haven't got time to, you know, I've only got 7 minutes to see the patient anyway. I haven't got time to talk to someone else. You know, who's going to pay for it? So millions of different types of concerns. And, you know, we had to look at the problem from each of those angles.
Yeah, stakeholders, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, build a product that answered the questions for each of those stakeholders. And, you know, that we, you know, I chose a particularly difficult area to go into because, you know, it's not within one organization, it's between organizations, you know?
Yeah.
So wow. it was you know, looking back, they're probably lower hanging fruit to choose. But anyway, you know, having chosen it, I think, you know, in the long term, it's been a very, you know, a really good decision, but tough at the beginning because there's so many stakeholders.
Just keep testing, keep iterating, right? That's the sort of the main key, I think.
Oh, hugely, yeah. So that is the essence of that. That's what it takes to be successful, build a brilliant product that people love using, is to listen, have empathy. So to really imagine yourself in their shoes, you know, using your product, and being very humble, you know, and really actively seeking negative feedback. You know, that is something that we, you know, we're, you know, building into the culture of our company now. It is in our company, you know, but just making it systematic is really actively seeking honest opinions, you know, and getting them from different sources. So you have to want to people to really like, you know, love your product and want to use this, and you have to understand why they would use it because they're busy. So you have to, you know, it has to add value to everybody.
And they've got to come back to it as well, sort of about retention, right? I think one of the biggest barriers, one of the issues, I think, is retention.
Yes, absolutely. Exactly. And you have to think what makes things sticky, you know? And it has to add value right now. So for busy people, it has to, you know, it has to help them with an important problem. Easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And easy.
Yeah. Exactly. I think as a medical student, I'm sure as a clinician, you know, we have that clinical expertise or clinical background, and we're seeing issues and problems all over the place in some cases. You know, on the walls you'll see like a little issue here and maybe a little project here, but I think one of the biggest barriers, I know from my own experience, to actually doing any sort of change is not having that sort of technical expertise or clinical sort of, or digital expertise. So when you were sort of faced with this problem, how did you go about getting that other side of the brain, I suppose, then build this product and build that platform?
Yeah. So, I was lucky. So, from having started, you know, another company, I had, you know, a lot of connections, a lot of understanding about technology. So the first person that I kind of discussed the idea with was, our CTO now. So we could build, you know, a product that people could use fairly quickly, you know, and say, and that is, you know, I was very lucky in a way that I had that connection. And, you know, he's very lucky that he's such a brilliant person. And, you know, we work together, you know, every day since then, you know, but I was friends with him for, 5 years, you know, before that. So he you know, he was somebody I trusted and knew was excellent, and you know, was able to have a conversation with him, to talk to him about an idea, and we built something that we could show people. So you know, you want to move from a PowerPoint presentation,
yeah, to actually having something there, yeah,
as soon as possible. Yeah. That is important. How you get there. So nowadays there are platforms that you can use that require no coding, for example. And a lot of, you know, user experience researchers and designers, they use them. So using something like that, but having something that people can touch, you know, or use quickly, even, you know, is never going to be perfect. It's never going to be anywhere near the final product, but it may capture the essence of what you know, your idea is. And I think that's very important.
Now look, one thing I've got to mention before we sort of go is, of course, we are during a pandemic. So I'm really interested to know how COVID-19 has sort of impacted the uptake of your sort of service, and how do you think COVID-19 has sort of transformed or just demonstrated how important Synapsys is moving forward?
Yeah, so it's made a huge difference to our company. So whether it's because of COVID-19 or whether things were changing anyway, there are signs before COVID-19 that you know, the idea of Synapses and what Synapses does, which is basically integrating the healthcare system, you know, different organizations working together to do what's right for patients. There were clear signs that, actually people were thinking in this way already, you know, with integrated care systems. But over the last, it's been 12 months now, hasn't it? You know, it's kind of the, unfortunately, the kind of anniversary now. And our business has just transformed in that 12 months. It feels like, you know, people talk about product market fit.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like now. It's like wow. People.
That's incredible to get.
Yeah. Cannot get enough of it and can't, you know, they want it today and they want more of it.
Wow.
So it's, it's a really, you know, exciting time for us. You know, I no longer do I have to explain the concept.
I just give it.
Exactly. How quickly can you get it?
Wonderful.
So the conversation is changed absolutely completely. And some, who knows? But you know, at least some of that is due to, you know, the mindset change that's happened around COVID. But I do think the move to integrated care was happening before then, and we're just kind of lucky that we're in at the right time with a product that has a track record already and is delivering value, and we can demonstrate that. So, you know, those things coming together is really powerful.
Look, it's been a real honor having you on the show. But before we go, I'm just wondering whether you had, you know, 2-3 sort of tips for students who are interested in possibly exploring, you know, digital health products, sort of projects in the future.
Yeah, so I think, like with anything, take steps to educate yourself, you know, reach out to people, you know, learn what it's about. Learn if, you know, so entrepreneurship is tough. And it's not for everybody, and it doesn't have to be for everybody. But you know, if you're interested in it, reach out to, you know, Synapses or other companies. There's lots of, you know, really inspiring, like people I've met, you know, who run other companies in this space, massively inspiring people. I love talking to them and learning from them. So I would say do that. If you do think of, you know, you want to do whatever project, a small project or a large project, or start a company, start with the end in mind. What do you want it to look like at the end? You know, and think of that holistically. What do you want for yourself, you know, in 5 years or in 20 years? You know, what do you want your life to be like? So think about all these things before you set off at the beginning, because that's a real anchor, really. It really helps. And it's really, I did that before starting Synapses, and it's really helped me. You know, when things are tough and you think, oh, things are not moving as quickly as I'd hoped. And then you look back at your plan and you're like, you know, I'm way ahead here. Years ahead of plan.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So it really helps to have think, you know, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
So I definitely advocate that. Yeah. So those kind of things. And, you know, anybody wants to reach out to me, feel free to do it. I'm pretty accessible.
Wonderful. Well, look, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak, and we'd love to have you sort of, you know, back again in the future for sure.
Absolutely. Pleasure to speak to you.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. I hope you all enjoyed it. If you did, we'd really appreciate if you give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. You could also follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter with all the links in the description below. Until next time, thank you so much for listening and take care.